from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm in wine country, so I'll whine for the entire show. No, I'm in Sonoma County, lovely Sonoma County. So I got tanked last night. That's what you do here. You get tanked. You get, it's a very civilized form of tanked, with great, great taste and discretion, but you're tanked. And so I'm a little post-tanked for this broadcast. But first things first, I appear to be the last person on the planet Earth to have been informed what the headline was the guy was apologizing for last week. You may recall in last week's broadcast I told you that a journalist, well, a copy editor at the Trentonian newspaper, it's a tabloid, but so what? It's a tabloid world. He had written a column of apology for a headline he'd written about a fire at a local hospital for people who had psychological problems. And he went through this whole column of great and copious apologizing without ever mentioning the headline, the offending headline. And the minute I got off the air, the email started flooding in. So I was, I guess, literally the last human on the planet to know. But just in case you're in line behind me, the headline he was apologizing for was, quote, roasted nuts, unquote. So there we have it. We now all are on the same page, which is where we all want to be. Everybody is on the Sunday Yak shows talking about what's going to happen in the market this week. And there's a tremulous quality to the question. And, you know, NBC has this show on called Fear Factor, but basically what they are is a fear factory, as has been observed before. And you can see that in this week's news cliche, replacing bad actors. This week, the words that were on the minds of, in the mouths of every broadcaster of a news program as the week ended were, this day the Dow hit the lowest point in 4 years. I'm thinking, 4 years? You know, call me, wake me when it's 20 years. My car, you know, the gas gauge is the lowest it's been in 4 years. That panics me. But the Dow, I know people have lost money there are those apologists for one thing or another who are in full blame the investor mode right about now. But really, spare me the fear and the tremulousness when the Dow has only gotten as low as it's ever been in the last 4 years. But, you know, it's the fear factory. Anyway, fear not. Hello, welcome to the show.
Learn from the street.
From the north end of the edge of America, from KRCB in Santa Rosa, California, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. Let's see. So far, I've been told that we're too much in the red and we're not enough in the red. So I know I'm somewhere interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, just the beginning of the divine retribution that's in store for this guy. I've told you. I am, just right, put me down on the list for the people who, you know, would wait in line to just throw a pie in the face of the dude you're getting a Dell guy. Well, first of all, his name is Ben Curtis. He's best known as the 20-ish Steven Pitchman in more than a dozen Dell computer ads. He's received an undisclosed punishment from the Screen Actors Guild for doing non-union commercials during the six-month strike against advertisers 2 years ago. So, yes, dude is a scab. He's scab dude. The first Dell spot with Ben Curtis as Stephen aired in November 2000. Several of the ads included his signature line, "Dude, you're getting a you-know-what." SAG officers said that several of his initial spots for the computer company were shot during the strike in the year 2000. A representative for Dell said that the dude was unavailable for comment. The Guild refused to respond to questions about the recent hearing by a New York SAG membership committee. See, that's where I want a camera. I want a camera in the SAG membership committee when the dude you're getting a Dell guy comes in and tries to explain why it was important to shoot those commercials during the strike. He was originally asked to appear before a hearing in Hollywood, but the hearing was later transferred to New York. Dude, if you thought you were going to get a better attitude in New York, 75 actors have been banned by the union for periods ranging from 6 months to 5 years. The SAG board found Elizabeth Hurley and Tiger Woods guilty of performing in non-union spots during that strike. $100,000 fines were levied against each one of them. But again, no disclosure of the punishment for the dude, the scab dude. In the corrections department, last week I passed on the word that Mickey Hart was being inducted into the Bohemian Club, which group of the richest, most powerful white men in America, which has their annual summer retreat just moments from here where I'm sitting right now. And it appears now, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, Mickey Hart is not being inducted into the Bohemian Grove encampment this year by Walter Cronkite. Mickey Hart is already a member, as is Bob Weir. Thank you. The counterculture lives. It is impossible to know, ladies and gentlemen, whether this is a real story, an apocryphal story, a real story about an apocryphal story about a real story. I just love it. You know, when it gets to that point, affection takes precedence over accuracy, sure. Why should I be any different from anybody else in the media? From the London Times, which, I will remind you, is a Rupert Murdoch newspaper, so be advised. Accordingly. No, he's a citizen of the world. Quote, Tony Blair's special relationship with George W. Bush is under considerable strain. Not only do the two disagree on Yasser Arafat's tenure as leader of the Palestinian Authority, but Blair has started telling disparaging anecdotes about the president. Baroness Williams of Crosby. Baroness Williams of Crosby recalled a story told to her by my good friend Tony Blair recently in Brighton. Blair, Bush, and Jacques Chirac were discussing economics, and in particular the decline of the French economy. The problem with the French, Bush confided in Blair, is that they don't have a word for entrepreneur. So this is Bush saying it to Blair, who told it to Baroness Williams of Crosby, who recalled it to somebody who recalled it to the Times of London. It's a great story. Come on. You would pay people to write material like that. I would pay Baroness Williams of Crosby to write material like that, if only I... Can we get the Baroness on the phone? I guess we cannot. Also from Britain, in the ongoing saga of research on genetically modified food, I hope, like me, you've just finished eating. Research commissioned by Britain's Food Standards Agency has shown that DNA material from genetically modified crops can find its way into human gut bacteria. Not the band, the actual bacteria. Researchers at the University of Newcastle in the north of England, Newcastle, said in a report this week they gave seven volunteers who, oh God, I'm going to bowdlerize some of this story, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure. They gave seven volunteers a single meal of a burger and a milkshake containing gene-spliced soy. Samples of intestinal bacteria were taken, and for three of the seven, an herbicide-resistant gene from the genetically modified soy was detected. Genetically modified material in most such foods poses no risk to human health, but many genetically modified crops have antibiotic, what's the matter with me, resistant marker genes inserted in them, raising concerns that the ability to fight infection could be compromised if such material passes to humans. It is surprising that a relatively large proportion of the genetically modified soy DNA survives passage through the small intestine in view of the depurination that occurs in the stomach, the report said. or depurination. Don't ask me. Don't look at me. I think we'll go over here and have today's tale of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. It is an exclusive feature of this broadcast. We only have one today. But, of course, to temper that, the guy who's head of the agency was fired this week. So, that's another notch in the LeShow belt. This is from a listener. My friend was evacuated in the Arizona fire and brought all his important belongings to California in his SUV. A week later, he took it all back. A few days later, still, he flew from Arizona to California. When he was retrieving something from his backpack, he pulled out a 30-round AR-15 magazine with three live rounds in it. He had forgotten to take it out of his bag when he got home and had inadvertently gotten it through the Phoenix carry-on scam. Scan. So we all feel safer, don't we? Now, ladies and gentlemen, time for another copyrighted feature. The copyrighted features just flow like melted butter, don't they? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. And the apology of the week really has to go to Elizabeth Grubman. Because so often on these apologies, they're issued as statements, press releases. This woman actually came right out and cried. She generated real apologetic tears. And you gotta say, come on, that's ahead of the game. Lizzie Grubman, it's been more than a year since she allegedly mowed down 16 people with her daddy's Mercedes SUV, but celebrity publicist Elizabeth Grubman has finally apologized. Quote, I just want to say how absolutely sorry I am that innocent people got hurt that night, a tearful Grubman said outside the Riverhead, New York courthouse, where a hearing was held after negotiations for a plea bargain failed. Please tell them, and please tell their families how terrible I feel. On July 7, 2001, Grubman backed into a crowd of people outside the Conscience Point nightclub in Southampton. She then allegedly fled the scene and waited for her lawyer at a friend's house. There were pelvis, leg, and ankle fractures and liver and spinal damage among the injuries. Without a plea bargain, Grubman apparently decided to ignore her attorney's objection to making a public statement. She has new public relations advisors. She's charged with leaving the scene of an accident, drunken driving, and 24 counts of assault. Her trial date will be set on August 16th, so it'll be a while yet, but she really is sorry. She's tearfully sorry, ladies and gentlemen. And in Michigan, State Representative William Callahan said his congressional primary opponent, incumbent Congressman Sander Levin, should not represent the newly redrawn 12th District. Callahan noted that Levin is Jewish, and the district is now more conservative and more Catholic than it was before. Quote, that man has never owned a Christmas tree. He's not a Christian. And I'm thinking, how can he represent me then? Callahan said. Callahan then apologized, and he told the Detroit Free Press his published comments were, quote, grossly out of context, unquote. What would be the context in which that would be okay? I think that's the follow-up question that American journalism fails to ask more than any other. In what context would that work? Just ask that one question, any journalist listening. Please, just jot that down. Next time you want to ask a follow-up question, just make it that one. Sir, one follow-up, please. In what context would that be okay? The big news of this week, perhaps, was the disagreement over the whereabouts, if any, of Osama bin Laden, a Middle Eastern source indicated and was quoted in the media as saying, without a doubt, he is alive, that he survived the Tora Bora attack. And later in the week, an FBI anti-terrorism expert, said he was absolutely sure Osama bin Laden is dead, although he hastened to add, perhaps under the prodding of a follow-up question, that he had no evidence. This sounds, ladies and gentlemen, like what we need is not more light on this subject, but just a little more heat.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is At Loggerheads. Symmetrically diametrical points of view on a major issue of the day. Today, is Osama bin Laden dead or alive? On the left, Joan Rivers. On the right, from Branson, Missouri, Yakov Smirnov.
Joan, if the United States Armed Forces raised to war footing and allowed to strike even at risk of serious civilian casualties haven't yet terminated sad existence of Osama bin Laden, all I can say is, what a country! This man is our worst enemy since Hitler figured out he looked better with mustache. You know, I didn't come all the way from Russia to see us treat our enemies better than Soviet government treated its friends in Russia. Terrorists were the best pilots. What a country. Best proof that Osama is dead, we haven't gotten new videotapes of him since we attacked Bora Bora. I mean, this man loves to make tapes. He loves camera. If I looked like him, I'd never take off the lens cap. And I wouldn't worry too much about necessary steps our government is taking to boost security, Joan. In Russia, civil liberties took you away. We know bin Laden was already sick. He had a kidney problem, and quite clearly none of his shavers worked. Bombing hell out of his hiding places literally pulled the plug on this guy's dialysis. So if he isn't dead, I'd hate to be his pants. What a pantry. John?
Yakov, please. So he bombed a few caves. That's proof that bin Laden is dead? Can we count? I mean, this man has more caves than Madonna has hairstyles. And sure, he's uglier than most of the guys I've dated in the last 5 years, but he's evil and he's smart. He basically tipped us off about his last attack, knowing that we were too slow, too disorganized, too ungepatschka to do anything about it. I wouldn't be surprised if any body we find is supposed to be bin Laden's turns out to be just some Arab extra from the streets of Beirut or wherever. Please, we have to work much harder to take this man out of action. We have to get the FBI and the CIA to be less jealous than actresses in the ladies' room at the Golden Globes. We have to tell the Pakistanis, you got to be totally on our side if you don't want to wake up tomorrow morning and find your curry has gotten a little too spicy. Frankly, Yakov, it's up to me. I'd much prefer to get Osama bin Laden alive rather than dead. Just imagine, we capture him, we try him, we convict him, and then we give him a really horrible sentence. We send him down to Florida for the rest of his life to play golf with O.J. Simpson. It's too slow and painful a punishment, even for the Arabs to have thought up. But as for now, Yakov, let's not be cocky. Take it from me, bin Laden is harder to find and catch than an eligible man at a B'nai B'rith dinner. From the left, I'm Joan Rivers.
From the right, I'm Yakov Smirnov. And we both agree on one thing.
One sure way to get on the air is to be at loggerheads.
At Loggerheads is produced with the assistance of a grant from the Forced Dichotomy Foundation. Next time, another important issue gets sliced in half lengthwise. At Loggerheads, I'm Ira Zipkin. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
I'm not afraid to die.
Live from Santa Rosa, California, this is Le Show. And ladies and gentlemen, that's just me moving the microphone. Don't worry about that. Pop star Michael Jackson begged the director of Men in Black 2 for a cameo role after mistaking the hit comedy for a tearjerker. Film fans may have laughed their way through the first Men in Black movie, but it reduced, and I'm quoting a newspaper here, it reduced the eccentric star to tears. Jackson turned down a part in the original movie, but after watching it, he called director Barry Sonnenfeld and asked for a part in the sequel. Sonnenfeld said, "I very much wanted Michael Jackson to be in the first Men in Black. There was a scene in it where we showed all these aliens, and George Lucas, Sylvester Stallone, Danny DeVito, and Steven Spielberg were all there, and I really wanted Michael to be in it. But for some reason, he didn't want to be considered an alien in Men in Black 1. But 15 minutes into shooting Men in Black 2, says Sonnenfeld, I got a message saying Michael Jackson really wanted to be in it. I had a lovely conversation with Michael, in which he told me he had seen the first Men in Black in Paris, and had stayed when all the other people left the theater and sat there and wept. I had to explain to him that it was a comedy." Unquote. Barry, I know the feeling. Sonnenfeld added, quote, he said he would love to be in Men in Black 2 wearing the black suit. All that mattered to him was that he wore that black suit, unquote. That leads me to where we're going next on this broadcast. Last week, all weekend long, the VH1 television channel was wall-to-wall with Michael Jackson. I don't know if this was the last payoff of an old deal or what, but an odd moment in time, just as he's hanging out with Al Sharpton, calling Tommy Mottola a racist, VH1 had a Michael Jackson marathon with the requisite number of tributes to his humanitarianism. But there were some moments in the career, in the now fast-changing career of the eccentric star, that, oddly enough, were left out of the VH1 Michael Jackson marathon. For example, there was the time about 4 or 5 years ago that Michael was said in the press to be planning a giant mural of himself on a major building, historic building in Hollywood, on Hollywood Boulevard. That was, ladies and gentlemen, I know this will be hard to believe, but the community of Hollywood got together and stopped that. Yes, I said the community of Hollywood, I know. Anyway, that didn't happen. There are a number of things that have been announced by Michael Jackson that didn't seem to eventuate. For example, a few years ago, he announced that he was asking Elizabeth Taylor to ask some of her fashion designer friends to design a new look for him. And then, a few years later, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Jackson came out with, I guess, what will now go down in the books as maybe the last arguably successful record of his career. And it was pulled back at one point because there were some lyrics that were deemed offensive on one song. I think the offensive lyrics, and I'm quoting Michael Jackson or that congressman, that guy running for congressman in Michigan. I'm quoting one or the other. Now, the lyrics from the song were, I think, do me, or bite me, kike me, something like that. Anyway, he was told, please, Michael, pull those back. And he reissued the song with less offensive lyrics. What was not included on the VH1 Michael Jackson Marathon was an explanation of how those lyrics got changed.
Time now for America's leading theater of finite possibilities, Alternative Scenario Playhouse. Today, Michael Jackson releases his new record with corrected lyrics. Scenario one.
Okay, Michael.
Jimmy's in the booth, right?
Right.
Jimmy, one thing. Is this mic a U87 or U86? Because the children of the world won't love me if I use an 86. Swear to God.
From the notes, it says you used an 86 on the original vocals, so I put in an 86.
Really? That's so terrible. That's unbelievable. Who could have written those notes, Sandy? It's just more the garbage that's written about me. It's what this song is all about.
Maybe you should put something about this in the lyrics.
You're kidding. And I'm crying.
Michael, not a problem. I'll swap it up for 87, okay?
Good. Jimmy, I thank you. And the children thank you.
They're welcome.
Don't. Okay, Mike, ready to roll?
Just a little more level.
Kick me, kick me, everybody bite me. Okay?
Rolling.
He's rolling, Michael.
I looked the track for you just so we don't have to keep stopping and starting. Okay?
I'm trying to write, okay? I'll just try a few, Sandy. Tell me when we got something, okay? Spick me, dick me, everybody kick me.
I hear problems.
Thank me, fag me, everybody bag me.
No, that is insensitive, Michael. What would you say to David?
Gavin? He didn't object to Jimmy.
I know, but onward.
Pull me, crowd me, everybody out me.
No.
Drop me, frog me, everybody dog me. I like everybody dog me. Reminds me of one of my good songs.
Second largest market in the world for MJ product. Maybe the first if we don't get the bump we wanted from Primetime Live.
Japan. But they are Japs, aren't they?
Not the point.
The Japs would be hurt?
I wouldn't want to have the next settlement agreement approved by Judge Ito. Let me put it that way.
Hey, I'm writing, big jerk face. Chicken me, nigga.
No, you are not ice whatever.
But I'm trying to say that I'm being treated like one.
Mike Tyson was treated like one. You've just had a rough press.
Okay. Chink me.
No. Look, what about scab me, stab me? You can say scab.
I don't want to say stab. Might offend Johnny Cochran.
Just trying to help.
Slap me, slope me, don't you rope-a-dope me. No, dope means good now. Towel-head me won't scan. Rag-head... No. Man, it seems like all the good words are offensive. I can't take it, Sandy. They won't even let me re-record my lyrics in peace.
Michael, you want to take 15?
Sure. Let's go to Baskin-Robbins. I'll wait in the car.
Now, scenario number two on Alternative Scenario Playhouse.
Jimmy? Sandy! Yeah. Listen, start shipping out version 2. Yes. The ones in the West Warehouse. That's right. Thank you.
Again next time, an interesting public event seen from two different angles on Alternative Scenario Playhouse.
Coming down the night shift. I've
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as companies and various figures from Michael Ovitz to Michael Jackson change their status, I guess is the nice way to say it. We're learning that what we thought were redwoods were maybe just poplars. And so getting back to the king of poplars, one of the many plans announced by Michael Jackson and his associates that never eventuated, at least not yet, you know? The fat lady hasn't sung yet, but the fat lady doesn't even have a lozenge in her mouth, let's put it that way. One of those plans was for Michael to build a Michael Jackson-themed amusement park in a country he said he had come to love, Poland.
Deu bicho, pé do samba, deu federa na muamba, deu surfista na central, deu entulho no canal e no jornal, deu a notícia que no cofre da polícia muita prova se escondeu. Estranho, bizarro, tudo isso aconteceu, acredite ou não, inesperado, normal só tem você e eu. Você e eu.
sozinho esperto. Tempestade no deserto, maremoto na piscina. E fique na Palestina, bang, bang no Borel. Estranho, bizarro, tudo isso aconteceu. Acredite ou não, inesperado. Normal só tem você e eu. Normal só tem você e eu. Sempre tem uma surpresa de emboscada. Muita carta foi marcada, muito jogo se perdeu. Estranho, bizarro, tudo isso aconteceu. Acredite ou não, inesperado. Normal só tem você e eu. Normal só tem você.
Ladies and gentlemen, sometimes one may be given to wonder who really loses in the whole digital television transition, the transition to the digital television wonderland. How about the people who watch news on television stations in smaller communities? Yes, in several news operations at Emma's Television's 15 stations in mid-sized markets such as Orlando, Wichita, Omaha, Topeka, and Terre Haute, news departments have felt the pinch. As small stations try to save up the money, the $3 million minimum necessary to pay for the equipment to transition to digital television. Yes, it's less news, but it's clearer. And of course, no, it's not. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everybody, Kate, Melissa, the management, the staff, the volunteers here at KRCB in Santa Rosa for making my stay here so pleasant. But that's going to put the cap on this edition of Le Show. I'm going to get tanked and wander out of here. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it, wherever you are. At two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like the Dow being the highest in 4 years. Whoopee! If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much, huh? Oh, if you're in Sonoma County and want to come see a funny movie about someplace a lot like Bohemian Grove, Teddy Bear's Picnic will be playing at the Rio Theater in Monte Rio tonight, tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Three opportunities to miss it. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you through the facilities of SAS. Is that what I'm supposed to say? I forget what I'm supposed to say. The show comes to you through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.